At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to today's episode of Money Talk with Skylar Fleming. In today's episode, we're going to be talking all about time and money. Let's take a look at our time as if it's our discretionary wealth, because that's what it is. We are all very wealthy when it comes to how much time we have. We have to make sure to use it wisely. We have a lot of time on our side. Today, I'm talking with Eric Nero about money and time. We're going to get right into the interview after this introduction, but today we're talking a lot about being intentional, making sure we have a purpose for our money and our time. Eric's going to share some great insights and some great, great analogies to show us how important it is to have money as our essential tool so that we're making the right choices. We're going to be talking about making intentional choices, making the choices that we want to make, dream meetings, the math of more, and what a true financial planner does, and lifestyle creep. There's a lot of great information in today's episode. And a quick reminder to leave a 5-star review on whatever platform you're listening to this episode on. And please share this with a friend and have a conversation about today's episode. The money talking points for today's episode are: how do you want to spend your money and time? And 2, are your purchases value driven? With the money talking points in mind, let's get right into today's episode. You know, we don't talk about money enough. It's a topic that gets ignored for some reason, even though it plays a role in everyone's day-to-day life. This issue is what brought Money Talk with Skylar Fleming to reality. I know you're probably busy and don't have time to research and learn about all the things that go into personal finance, but that's where this podcast, Money Talk with Skylar Fleming, comes into play. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming. I'm here to do the research and learn about all the things that go into personal finance. The goal is to simply get us talking about money, so let's get talking. Welcome to today's interview with Eric Nero. Today we're going to be talking about time and money and how to balance it and some of the great conversations that you can have down that path. Eric, do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself to everyone?
Absolutely. Skylar, really appreciate you having me on. My name is Eric Nero. I'm the founder and president of First Step Wealth Planning.
Awesome. That was quick. I love it. Like, nice and quick introduction. So founder and president. Maybe what do you do? Just a quick introduction. What do you do there with your business?
So I'm a financial planner. I serve people who are either retired or soon to be retired, and I really help them understand kind of their values and importance of money and how it is that it can support what they want to do in the next phase of their life. And it really boils down to how they can use their lifelong savings to recreate a paycheck while they head into retirement to do the things that either they've pushed off or that they would like to pursue in this next phase of their life.
Cool. That sounds like some fun work you get to do there. That sounds really interesting.
It is. It's a lot of fun. It's working with people and seeing the changes is really what gives me the greatest amount of satisfaction where, you know, when I typically first work with people, there's a lot of consternation, not knowing what to expect, outright fear. And then having that change over time so then that they can actually realize the things that they want to do. It's very fulfilling.
Yeah, I'd say that sounds super rewarding for like anyone, I guess, that does any sort of financial education. But I'm sure especially with financial planning, helping people see that change is probably really rewarding. How is it or why is it so important to, let's just jump right into it. Why is it so important to value our time and not just value making more money?
Time really equals discretionary wealth. Nobody can buy more time. And so how you treat your time and how you spend your time is very important. It really centers on money values. What's important about money to you? How have you learned about money? And money is a very, very, very personal and very complicated matter. And everybody learns about it differently. And so understanding how it factors into your life, because although it may not rule everything in your life, it does touch everything. And so how you spend your time and how it is that you want to create your wealth and what it means to you really centers around Is it a combination of status, achievement? Is it just a mechanism to be able to do the things that you want to do? And so I think the first step there is just arriving at what is important about money to you, and then digging a little bit deeper to understand how you want to spend your time in pursuing money. And for my clients, how it is that they want to spend their time after they've achieved kind of the pinnacle of the mountain, if you will, and using that lifelong savings to support their vision of their next phase of life.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah. I love the couple points you made there about how time is like this ultimate wealth tool that you have. You can't buy more. You can't like exchange it on a market or anything like that. But also the idea that money touches everything. I think that's something that I've emphasized in past episodes, is that even though we may not need to focus primarily on money or make money our only goal, you got to think about it. Like, there's no way around that. It's going to impact everything, unless, I think the words I've used before is, unless you live like completely remote off the grid in some like crazy island where there's no currency, then maybe you're good there. But that's very interesting. I like the idea that we just need to consider our time more and think about it. What steps can we take to use it effectively? How do we make sure our time's being used properly?
I think purpose and intention is really the starting point, and understanding, once you've gotten in touch with what your values of money are, then using it intentionally. And I guess look at it from the same perspective as, all right, you have money in your savings and investment accounts, and you want to be intentional about how you spend it and where you spend it. Doing the same thing with your time, but having it all center on your values and beliefs. All right, so how do your values and beliefs guide the decisions that you make to spend that priceless currency, which is time? And none of us knows how much we have of it, and it's depreciating daily. So I love your analogy where, you know, you can't trade time on an exchange. You know, even the wealthiest humans on planet Earth can't buy more time. So being intentional, and I also like your comment on, it does affect everything. And if your financial life is not in order, even though you may have, by all yardsticks, a tremendous amount of wealth, the relationships you have with friends, family, the relationship you have with yourself mentally and physically, and maybe even your faith in something larger than yourself, it's all going to, you're not going to be able to invest fully in those other areas if the financial aspects of your life are not in proper order. Irrespective of whether you have a small amount of wealth or a very large amount of wealth, people are people. And if you have that all straightened out and you have a high degree of confidence, then you can spend your time with more intention and purpose, because you know what you're going after and you're seeking it and you're spending intentionally that time to get the fulfillment that you're really looking for.
Yeah, sounds like intentionality is going to be a thread woven through this episode. It's important to be intentional with our time. I like that you said, I believe you were heading down the path that we need to make sure our money's in order before we can really commit to that other stuff. Is that what you were saying there?
Yeah, I guess the analogy I make is that, you know, if you look at your financial life as maybe your garage or your basement, if it's cluttered, if you don't know where things are, if you have things in there from years ago and all these different tools, if you need to get something done maybe around the house, but you don't know where anything is, you're spending a lot of time, you're getting frustrated, and then it just becomes this momentous task that just compounds over time that, okay, I don't want to tackle it, it's going to take too much time, but it's always something in the back of my mind. It's like a thorn in your mind. So being able to be organized, I think, is really the first and foremost, because if you've been saving for 20, 30, 40 years, likely you have an accumulation of a lot of different things that may have been appropriate at a different time of your life. Just like maybe that purchase of a tool in your garage was appropriate for a job that you needed to do years and years ago, but never is going to, you know, be appropriate now. It's getting that organized, understanding where everything is, and then saying, okay, once I have everything in order, everything's in its rightful place, I can have a better understanding of what that tool means to what I want it to do in the future, and whether that tool even needs to be part of my toolbox or in my garage in the first place. So it alleviates a lot of mental clutter, quite frankly, by saying, okay, here's all of the different things that I have. What do I do with all this stuff? And in many cases, you just kind of take the stuff that isn't necessary and you look to repurpose it and just focus on the things that are important right now. And then with understanding comes greater sense of meaning. With greater sense of meaning becomes greater behaviors that move you toward where you want to be ultimately. And it goes right back to what you had said before, greater intentionality and purpose.
Awesome. I love this connection that we're making between tools in your garage and money, because money is a tool. That's something that I think is very important to realize when you're on any sort of a money journey, whether it's coming from debt or going for wealth and working with you. You need to realize money is the tool to help you accomplish things. So I like the idea of this garage that we're building where the people's money are all over the place, whether it's like asset allocations or things like that, or they ended up with this home that they had given to them through a relative's passing or something like that. And like you've been saying, if that garage is a mess, everything else inside or outside that you're trying to do is just going to be confusing, because you say, how do I use this house and this like inherited stock and all these things to accomplish my goal to go on a nice vacation with all my family? It can be really confusing. So how do we make intentional money choices, or clean up that garage, I guess, to maybe spend our time a little better down the road? How can we kind of start prepping that garage a little bit?
Sure. May I share a story that I think might kind of touch on all of these things?
Yeah, of course.
So years ago, I met a couple, and by the time I had met them, I was the third financial advisor planner that they had been sitting in front of in the last 4 years. And when I asked them, you know, what it is that they thought that I could help with, it was very much centered on being able to get returns that are better than the market. And, you know, when I dug in a little bit deeper, you know, what's important about that to you? And then, you know, both of them kind of articulated what they were looking for, which was different, which is typical with couples. But what I ended up finding is that with a little bit of asking questions, what they wanted and what was really important about money to them was time with their family. So they had children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. And after a little bit of time of understanding and getting to know them a little bit better, it wasn't about the return on their money. What they both wanted is they wanted a family vacation, over 30 people in Europe for a month. And so what I was able to help them do is, okay, here's how you can use your money to do that. And they did. So they went on a vacation. It was a very large ticket, all right? But they did all the things that they wanted to do. And when I met with them, when they came back, what he said to me, who was in, he at the beginning is an engineer by trade, was very concerned about numbers and how everything was going to shake out. What he said to me was, Eric, I've always known I could go on this vacation, but I also knew myself, and I knew that because of the dollars involved, I would have cut here and I would have cut there. Here I didn't. And when I went over there, I was fully invested in spending all of my time with my entire family. And I didn't think about money once. And so it was more or less by going through a process of understanding what's important about money to both he and his wife, and not being so focused on the returns, which really weren't the important aspect. He was moving from advisor to advisor because everybody was promising better returns. And those were meaningless to he and his wife. What was meaningful was how he gets to use his money. And he knew he had enough, but he just didn't know the application. And more importantly, he wasn't able to give himself the permission to go ahead and do it because he just couldn't get over that hump. And he needed a third party perspective to help him do that. And so that's what I mean about being, you know, intentional. We organized his garage, got all of the tools in place that were necessary, and framed it differently so he was able to spend less time, because he didn't ultimately want to spend a bunch of time managing his own money. He wanted to spend time with his family, but he felt the necessity to do it to take care of his wife, who at that point had not had any involvement in the finances. So he had a sense of responsibility. He wanted to fulfill that, but then he offloaded all of it after he understood, all right, I'm doing activities that aren't productive for me. And how is it that I can just focus more of my time and attention? Which goes back to what I had said before. If your financial garage is all messy, you're not going to be able to fully invest in your friends, family, faith, and in your own mental and physical fitness. And he was able to do that. And so he was able to see the value of it and live a more fulfilled life knowing that his garage was in order.
That's awesome. That's such a cool story, I think. One thought that came to my mind is, maybe it's less about returns in the market, like percentages and growth and things like that, more about return on your time. Like we've been saying right at the beginning, it's just a different type of resource. But if you're able to take your money and generate more returns in that way, like returns in relationships, returns in experience and things like that, I think often we find those are more valuable. Like it's just, it's a different tier of being able to use your time like that, use your wealth like that, to be able to go on a trip and not think about money. I think most people can't imagine something like that right now. And that's a different process of like getting out of debt and making sure you're financially safe. But even if you're at a point where you are financially safe, it can still be hard to do those sort of things. Like you said, he would have cut here, cut this, thought about money the whole time because it wasn't, that's just the way he was wired. So I really like that reshift, that story that you just told. Yeah, that's awesome. What are some other ways maybe people can, I guess, prepare just a little bit with those sort of things if they're not in a position right now to do something like that? Maybe what are some thoughts about money choices they can make?
I think irrespective where anybody is with respect to their financial reality today, whether they're looking to build or get out of debt, or they have tons of student loans and whatever else, or they just started a family, wherever you are in that journey, wherever you are, start with what's important about money to you. And then dig a little deeper, because it's like Maslow's, you know, hierarchy of needs, right? When I ask that question to clients, typically the first answer is, okay, I want to be safe and secure. I want to know that my needs are met. And that's normal. All right. But what's important about meeting those needs and going a little bit deeper? And then having that conversation, if it's a couple, partners, spouses, listening to each other. And that's what I help with, is being able to make sure that one spouse doesn't talk over the other and is able to fully articulate what is important about money to them. Because I've seen many, many cases. There's another example where I had that conversation. This couple had been married for over 30 years. And in letting his wife speak, he had never known that her relationship with money was formed by her childhood and how her father had squandered money. He had always known that there was some type of problem, but she had never spoke about it. And then he's like, that makes all the sense in the world now. All the things that I know about you, yes, now it's all tied to that moment where, you know, your father squandered money and your mother and your siblings were in a bad financial spot because of that. That makes all the sense in the world. So it's getting what's important about money to you. And then having the patience to kind of work through that, because I think most people, especially when talking to like financial people, aren't necessarily being asked that question. It's numbers. Okay, where are you invested? How are you put together in stocks and bonds? And we can help you with all this type of stuff. That's kind of where the industry is. But there is a shift. It is happening where there is more of the human care, the human side of money and the emotional relationship with money. Because all these decisions, and I see this over and over and over again, decisions are misaligned to people's emotional connections to money. It's all just, okay, we can get a better return, or it's a better asset allocation, or your risk is better in line. And in 10 years, 5 years, whatever it is, you'll be out of debt, or you'll be ready to retire, or whatever it is. The first step, and this is why I named my firm First Step Wealth Planning, the first step is understanding the emotional aspect of money, because all decisions need to be based on the beliefs and values of that individual person. And without knowing it, you're throwing a dart at a chart, and you're hoping that it works. And that's why so many people are maybe not necessarily dissatisfied with their financial advisors, but they're not completely confident. You know, there's a big disconnect between people's confidence in their financial circumstances and their satisfaction with their financial people, which tends to be high, but their confidence in their financial reality is not as high as their confidence or loyalty in their financial advisor. And that's because of relationships. There's a whole other number of dynamics involved with that. However, if somebody just asks themselves and has the time and patience to do the work necessary, because they're hard questions, it requires a lot of system two thinking, you know, like Daniel Kahneman's think fast, think slow. It requires a lot of energy to think about it and patience to be able to do it. And you can't boil the ocean, but at least having a process to revisit it, spending that time with the people who are most important in your life and asking them what's important and truly listening, or having a person that can help guide you through that. I think that's the most important aspect of it. And then wherever you are in the journey, you can certainly offload some of that emotional baggage that may be being carried without even knowing it, to be able to just free yourself up to say, okay, now I have a purpose. Now I can dedicate my time, effort, and energy toward that. And I know what I can delegate, because you can't delegate your faith. You can't delegate your mental and physical fitness. You can't delegate your relationships with friends and family. That's all something that you have to personally invest in. But when it comes to your money, you can choose to delegate that in a number of different forms.
Awesome. That was fantastic. Rewind that section and listen to that over again. There's a couple threads that I took from there that I think I've mentioned before in previous episodes, and maybe I'd like to talk about a little bit. But one is that I need to learn how to use boil the ocean in a sentence, because I liked that. That was a good one. But one of the things that I say is that money's more than math, because if it was just math, then we would have it calculated out perfectly, which I think is what was coming from your conversation a little bit. You got to talk about that emotional perspective, the impact that it has on your relationships and things like that. It's just something we have to discuss. And then I have a money talk resource that's the 7 money talking points. And one of them is, what do you want your retirement to look like? Or what are the big financial goals that you have? And I think that highlights the emphasis that you were putting on of dream a little bit, have those conversations about what would you like to do with money, understand like how it plays a role that you've always wanted to go on a trip because your parents went on this nice trip on their 40th wedding anniversary. So you want to do something like that to create that same value that you saw in their relationship as they were getting older. Things like that, I think, help us understand why things are so important. What do you think about like a dream meeting? Have you ever heard of that sort of term where you sit down with a spouse and you just dream together and write down some of your big money goals?
Yeah. I think it's a natural consequence of getting more in touch with the values. I think a lot of things springboard from the recognition of what the beliefs and values become. And it just becomes clearer what those dreams become. I think it's difficult to ask somebody, and it's a typical question that financial advisors will ask, all right, what are your goals? What do you want to do? And it's like almost being asked like, all right, what's your favorite movie or what's your favorite food? It's contextual, right? It's difficult to answer those questions and say, what is my favorite movie or food? It's all just depends on the context of it. And so when there's an understanding of the history, the education, the importance of money, another thing that I use is the maths of more. And you can't figure it out. If the goal is, I just want more, and I need a higher return because I want more. It's, in my opinion, it's impossible for a financial professional, financial planner, financial advisor to satisfy or meet or make the grade for somebody who's just looking for more. Because it's like running, it's like that dream where you're running down the hallway and the end of that hallway just gets further and further and further away. And that's what I mean by the maths of more. You just can't calculate it. There's no quantification. But if you center it and say, okay, well, what's the more important? Like, what does the more get you? And maybe they don't even understand at the time. Maybe it's just a growing aspect that they need to look at to say, why am I doing this? All right, do I need more because I need more status, more power, more whatever? And that's the important aspect of it. To some, there is. Or am I looking for more because, you know what, at some point, maybe at some point in my life, I didn't have a lot. Maybe there was a scarcity situation in my life and I always want more. But recognizing in that case that, okay, there was a scarcity moment, getting over it. Okay, do you have that? Is that your reality today? And how do you prevent yourself from having another scarcity event? That's where you can do some financial planning. All right, well, we'll make sure that you're never going to have a scarcity event again by doing these things and using these appropriate tools for you. So part of the analogy I make with clients is that when working with a financial planner, especially a fiduciary, it's like going to a tailor. So if you go to a tailor and say, okay, I'm a man, so I want a suit and I want a blue suit. The tailor might just say, great, let me measure you up. Here's some patterns in blue. They make it specifically for my body and off you go. And that's kind of the non-fiduciary aspect of things. The fiduciary aspect of things is that tailor is going to say, well, what's the event that you're going to? What kind of impression are you looking to make? Have you been to these things in the past? What have you noticed from others who are there? So it's not just coming up with, all right, here's the fabric, the pattern, the color, the fit. It's how are you going to feel when you're in that suit? And is that suit the appropriate suit for the occasion that you're going to? And so what a true financial planner and advisor, in my opinion, does is it outfits the wardrobe that a client's going to need to be able to function in the various capacities across their life. Because whether they're going to one occasion or another, money's going to be behind it. Very close. So, all right, how do you outfit their wardrobe to fit them perfectly? And just like any other wardrobe, you know, that double lapel polyester brown suit that's from the disco era probably isn't going to fit into like a formal event today. Maybe a Halloween party or a theme-based party, but it doesn't have the correct context if you're going to a wedding or a funeral or a gala or whatever else. But knowing which one to pull out of the closet and having it custom made for that person, I think that's really the value of a proper financial planner and helping clients understand how their money can support their goals, visions, dreams. It comes across a little different from everybody. Maybe the words are a little bit different, but the concept is still the same. It's how do they want to live their lives and spend their time with purpose and intent to be as fulfilled as they can be.
Yeah. Wow. I love all these connections you're making. The garage story, the suit tailor. This is fantastic. I love all these relationships that help us paint this picture in our mind. I think that's fantastic. Let's wrap up the conversation with maybe a little bit of just a topic for the younger people who feel like maybe they can't get the engine going. They can't get that wealth building machine going because they're getting these raises at work, but they just can't seem to figure out where that money's going. And that's often through lifestyle creep that sort of stuff disappears. You're buying new cars, you're buying new suits, you're buying fancy stuff that you don't really need instead of putting it away properly. How can lifestyle creep impact our time versus money situation down the road?
Yeah, I think lifestyle creep kind of fits into that, the maths of more. And so, yes, as you're progressing and your career moves and you're starting to make a little bit more money, yes, you can acquire some more things. But it really comes down to what are those things giving you and how are those things important to you? So if it's buying a new car, okay, maybe I want to buy a flashier model. Okay, but what does that mean? What kind of utility? There's a lot of connotations to cars and what I call wealth idols, right? They signal a certain amount of success because that's how they're marketed, right? Okay, you own a certain hood ornament. It means you've kind of quote unquote arrived. All right, what's important about that to you? Because in that case with a younger person, chances are, I mean, if you went through an undergraduate program, you're carrying a lot of debt with you. So does it make sense to have that? How much utility do you get from it? And what does it really mean? Because you're probably going to be pushing out your financial independence. And then it's just really a discussion around, all right, if you do this, if you make a little bit more money and you have a little bit more stuff, is that consistent with where it is that you want to be emotionally? And is financial independence even important to them? Is it even on their radar map? And so understanding how each and every choice that they make has trade-offs and consequences, and then understanding that. Now, they can still make the choice and say, this is what I want to do, and this is, you know, going forward. But especially with younger people now, I'm the father of younger. I have a senior in college and a freshman in college. So, you know, I'm trying to help them in the same respect. It's like you're going to be graduating with things you need to pay off. And as you progress and as your career, because pay yourself first, be financially independent. And that can mean a tremendous amount of not only options for you going forward, if you decide to say, okay, I'll get the secondhand car versus the brand new car or the house that maybe isn't in the ideal neighborhood or the neighborhood that I aspire to right now, but it allows me to live my life with more intention and purpose. And I'm finding that in the younger generations, there's more connection to that. There's more importance placed on that versus maybe other generations. But, you know, I don't have any scientific math to support mm-hmm. that, but it just seems to be anecdotally through the children of my clients who I get to meet and interact with, that's how they're thinking about things as well.
Awesome. Well, that's good news to hear that maybe we're starting to recognize things like lifestyle creep, make those intentional decisions, learn about our like money emotions and things like that first before we start throwing money at things, learn where we want the money to go ultimately. This has been a fantastic conversation. We had one more question about how do couples communicate with each other about versions of retirement and their vision of retirement. I think we'll save that one either for something on social media or maybe a part two down the road. But this has been a fantastic conversation, Eric. Thank you for coming on. How can people find you or get in touch with you or find you online?
Sure. So my profile is on LinkedIn. My firm has a Facebook page, Instagram, my website, first-stepwealthplanning.com. You can either DM me on LinkedIn. You can contact me directly off of my website. All of my contact information is there as well. And I make myself available for introductory calls for everyone to at least help them understand where it is that they're looking to go. Like I said, I focus primarily on people who are nearing or if not in retirement for how it is they can recreate their paycheck in retirement, but I'll work with a lot of their children as well. So, you know, 15 to 20 minute introductory call to give a couple of poignant things that they can use to move forward, I think is important. So I'm available for anybody that's looking for that as well.
Fantastic. Well, this has been a good introductory call for me with you. So I like that. So if anyone else has a call or they're nearing those stages that Eric was talking about, make sure you reach out to him there. But Eric, thank you so much for coming on. This has been a great episode.
Skylar, really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to that interview with Eric Nero. And thank you so much to Eric for coming on today's episode. If you want to contact him or reach out to him, of course, all of his links are in the show notes. But I hope you enjoyed and were able to take away something from today's episode. I know the money talking points were something that stood out to me, and I think it will be a great resource for you following today's episode. So be sure to head over to skylarfleming.com/resources and get your free money talking points. But I would love to host a Q&A episode. And if you have any questions that came up from today's episode or within the next week, if you think of a financial question, please send it my way, moneytalk@skylarfleming.com, or you can contact me on social media. I would love to start building up some questions and have a listener's question episode. It'd be a ton of fun, and I'm looking forward to interacting with each one of you listening. So please shoot me an email with any questions or feedback that you had from today's episode. But thank you for listening to Money Talk with Skylar Fleming. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Skylar Fleming. This show is provided for informational and entertainment purposes and may not be specific to your unique situation. Please be sure to do additional research before making any financial decisions.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's,